more. Baby, it's not nice. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass may dab in the middle of it. Grass may dab in the middle. We are grass may dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness, we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield. Good evening, George.
Charlotte, how are you doing? Okay, everything going all right?
Yeah, everything's going wonderful here in Missouri. We're having a nice fall.
What we're going to do tonight on this first hour is we have a memorial hour dedicated to Eric Anders Samuelson. He was a friend of both myself and Charlotte's, and he was quite a dedicated person to the truth. He was an attorney, and he delved into conspiratorial issues on a very, very deep basis. And gosh, there's not one bad thing I can say about Eric Anders Samuelson. He dedicated his life to trying to be a help to this country and to save this country in many ways. What did you think of, what was your first impression, Charlotte, of him?
Oh, very intelligent man. One of the most strikingly intelligent people I've ever met. He ranks among the top three. And he was rather a big person, not obese or anything like that, but didn't he stand pretty tall?
Yeah, he was over 6 feet, probably 6'2", something like that.
Yeah, how did you come to meet Eric Anders Samuelson?
Well, Eric and I happened to be at a restaurant. I'm not going to name the restaurant just to keep that name out. But we were at the same restaurant one evening, one afternoon, late afternoon, early evening, in 1990, and I heard him over there talking with a tax group. He was representing property tax owners, protesters in trying to go and get their taxes reduced, their property taxes. And I heard that. I went out to my car, and I came back in with this big, all this big sheet. I guess the sheet was, what is that size? I forget the size, but it's bigger than just letter size or even bigger than a legal size. But anyway, it's a big sheet, and on that sheet was the CFR members, Council on Foreign Relations, trilateral members, all members of Congress, all the top generals, and what they belonged to and what their affiliations were. And I had about five or six copies, and I took five or six copies and gave them to Eric and distributed that to his group there. And that's how we first met.
Wow.
And so we had a meeting of the minds. We were both dedicated, and we have been, and you have too, Charlotte. You've been wonderful in this area. Go ahead.
Let's be sure and let the listening audience know the great extent of his accomplishments. I would say that when it comes to conspiracies, he would have to be at the master's level.
Yes. In fact, he coined the term conspiracy scholars, okay?
Oh, there you are.
And we're going to put up on the site, it's up there right now. We're live out of Austin, Texas. This is the 30th of September. But we have up on the site right now a click-off that will take you to a site that was actually the Nook. They call it the Nook. And he had in there all these click-offs, and it's just a marvelous resource for what we're talking about and what he was dedicated to also.
Yes, of course he was a man of faith as well.
Yes, but he was not fooled by the trickery of some trends and in the Christian, movements. He could see clearly the problems with Christian movement in relationship to Judaism or whatever. But he was very objective. He was never insulting to anyone, and anyone who, no matter their faith. In fact, we had people from all faiths and all ethnic groups come in the group. We started founding, I forgot to mention this, after we met, we started meeting every Monday night at this restaurant for between 8 o'clock in the evening till midnight. And so we attracted a large number of people over about five years we met there. And so, but we never rejected anyone by their race or their, or whatever religion or anything else. This was open. And so we had all kinds of people there. And it was just a wonderful experience.
Yes, people, when you say all types of people, you literally mean all types of people from all walks of life.
There was one group, two or three guys, that I did kick out of there, okay? But I did it in a nice way. I sort of insulted them a few times. They didn't like that, so they didn't come back. But the only guys that I ever kicked out of the group, they brought into the group these cartoons right out of Nazi Germany, okay? And they were very scurrilous and very insulting to Jews, period. And so I just, you know what I mean? They weren't looking at a constructive debate here or discussion about Zionism or anything else. They were just down on Jews. And they were using these cartoons right out of Nazi Germany. And so I didn't want our group to be tainted by that. So I just started insulting them a few times. Before they knew it, they were gone. So
right.
This group was
you're
not.
One,
what, go ahead.
You're the one who introduced me. You're the one who introduced me to Eric.
Right.
And I can remember reading some of the stuff that he had written and being just absolutely blown away.
Right. We have a click off on the site of much of what he's written right now, and so it's just endless what he did.
It sure is. And, of course, a lot of this stuff, if you've been around the conspiracy movement for any duration of time,
right.
You recognize the, the Club of 300?
Yes, the Committee of 300. That would be Dr. John Coleman.
Right. You remember names like the Royal Institute of International Affairs.
Right.
You understand where the Council on Foreign Relations origins come from.
Yeah, those are sister, you know what I mean, organizations. They were founded at the same time.
Right.
They didn't want to name the Council on Foreign Relations anything that would tie them back to the Royal Institute. So they came up with a different name that sounded totally not attached to the Royal Institute. But they were brother and sister organizations.
You know, George, we haven't talked about the Pilgrim Society before that.
The Pilgrim Society was a very, very high-level group in New York City, predominantly, and England. But the Queen would come up there over there once a year and have an exclusive dinner. And these were the cream de la cream of the power group in the so-called Eastern establishment. And that's what the Pilgrim Society was about, or is, still is. These things are so broad. When our viewers and our listeners go in and see this and start clicking off on this, they'll be so surprised that the immensity of the so-called, you know what I mean, institutions and so forth that run the world are mind-boggling. It's just overwhelming the size and scope of how this thing is managed and the different organizations and individuals that make up, you could say, the dominance or the management or rule. This is the rule of the world we're talking about. We're talking about the world rulers here, okay?
And Eric Samuelson was a man of courage. There's many names that he brought forth that he passed along, and he was a person that named names for.
Right. He didn't shy away from describing Zionism for what it has become and tying that into all of these different insider groups. But this one click off there, the 1782 Congress of Wilhelmsbad, was right outside of Frankfurt, Germany. It was a principality then. But the Rothschilds were there and so forth. And at that meeting, they called all the heads of the Freemason groups together in Europe and had them swear an oath to the Illuminati. So some would characterize this as a takeover of Freemasonry by the Illuminati system. Okay? So that's just one little insight that he compiled over the years. John Robison would write a book later, several years later, called Proofs of a Conspiracy 1794 or something like that, and send that book to George Washington to alert him to the takeover of Freemasonry by the Illuminati system. And we don't know if George Washington read that thoroughly or what he did after that. But because of the founding fathers were Freemasons, then John Robison out of Edinburgh, quite a scholar himself, wanted to warn the American Freemasons about this takeover that he witnessed or knew about in this Wilhelmsbad conclave. See what I mean?
Right, and I think Adam Weishaupt also called for the demise of the Catholic Church.
Yes, this Illuminati system is against all religions, okay? And you'll find that in Albert Pike's writings of the southern jurisdiction of, you know what I mean, Albert Pike's out of Missouri originally, but the southern district of Freemasons there, of Scottish Rite Freemasonry is what he founded in Charleston, South Carolina. But you'll find this in the Albert Pike's writings that extensively in his book, Morals and Dogma. It was the Bible of Freemasonry that he wrote and put together. And you'll find that, time and again mentioned in this. But the Illuminati system had two teachings at the highest level, they stated. One was that religions are contrivance to use men, to manipulate men, and then they talked about self-governance, okay? So, but these high-minded things were always put forward to attract the average, initiates into the Illuminati or into the secret society. The real top level, the devils are at the top, Charlotte, from my readings and studying this for about 30, 35 years. Any organization, the top level people, they're right at the top, are manipulating everybody else below them in a lot of different mind control ways. That's what I see. It's cultic. It becomes very, 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 like cults, you know what I mean?
Right.
So Eric and I would sit for hours and discuss these things, and it would go on. Well, we went down once. Do you remember we went down to the valley that time?
I do, and I think I recall a discussion about natural law.
Yeah, we had a couple of rooms there at the motel, and I set up all the equipment in my room, and then we phoned Eric. We didn't have to bring him over there. But we called him and we tied him in. It was a live broadcast on GCN that night, I believe. It was a Saturday night, 7 to 9. And so we had a discussion with Eric and about different aspects of the, so you could say the conspiracy, you know, in general. You know what I mean? And he always had, now on these lists, okay, that you see here, I had a little bit of, I came up with the idea to do this, okay? I didn't actually carry out, the actual work, but Eric got onto it real big time early on in the 90s, and he actually started putting this stuff up. I didn't know about some of this at the time even as it was going up because we weren't always talking every day together. But he did a fine job in doing this. But right at the beginning of that, when we met, that Randy Weaver thing had happened. Then not long after that, in 93, the Waco, Branch Davidian thing burned down occurred. And then there was a year that went by and 2 years that went by, and then the Oklahoma bombing occurred of the Murrah building. And then, of course, later that in 93 was the first bombing of the World Trade Center. And then in 2001 was the takedown of the World Trade Center buildings, all seven of them. There's actually seven buildings that were affected there on in the World Trade Center site there in New York City.
Fascinating.
So, yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
I also put together a list of Knights of Malta.
Yes, yes, yes. The Malta is interesting because it's tied to the Catholic Church, okay? And you'll see, I believe, many of your upper-level people that are running for president, you know, in the United States are brought into the Knights of Malta. But it's an upper level. But something that's even more secret, they say, is the Le Cercle group. And Le Cercle, you'll never hear them hardly at all. But they're also Roman Catholic, but they're the highest level, you can say, secret society in Europe, or one of those. You know, there's a lot of these different secret society groups, but the Le Cercle is pretty, it had kings and queens and people like that in there. See what I mean?
Sure.
The von Habsburg people were part of the Le Cercle. I think he died recently, the last surviving von Habsburg. But that's the Austrian line, see, monarchy line. And he just died in the last year, few years. But he was part of the circle. David Rockefeller was part of the circle at one time. But he was persuaded to leave, and not because he was still big in Manhattan Bank, Chase Manhattan Bank. And he was persuaded to go ahead and leave, see, and withdraw his membership because of the association with the circle that could be detrimental to their business, okay? I mean, he still worked with all those people. It's just that he was no longer a member, officially member, see?
Fascinating.
But it goes on and on. I mean, there's the Roman group. I mean, the Rome, a group of Rome there. You know what I mean? Oh, Rhodes Scholars. There's click-offs on that. Chatham House website. The Austrian League of Rights. I mean, there's a lot. There's Bilderberg participant group listed here also. Okay? And it's just amazing, the collection. Oh, there is one thing in here that we put up before on one of our program, and it's really interesting, and it would be a compilation of collectivism. Okay? And okay, here it is. On that page that we have up, you'll see a couple of click-offs there. Okay, and those click-offs are the spiritual realm and I believe the natural realm, I think, is what he has there. But anyway, right at the top of the natural realm is a brief chronology of collectivism. Now, this is where Eric Samuelson excelled, okay, is he puts out here, we've actually, on one of our several of our programs, we put up this, the click-offs here. So you could go in there, and this has 1, 2, 3, 4 different sections to it, okay, and it goes into collectivism unlike you've ever even could imagine, okay. And so if we're talking to someone that is a collectivist from the socialist, communist side, you could say, well, we can point them to this. Whether they want to read that or not would be entirely up to them, okay? But it really goes into collectivism. And actually, Leon Trotsky, one of the organizers of the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, was actually here in the United States in 1907, okay? And, 1914. And he was here, and they put him on a ship with a passport and transported him into Russia to foment revolution. So that was under Wilson's administration, and those were American passports given to him and his fellow travelers. So we have been actually, if you look at the total overall scheme of things, you have a corporate fascism that has developed because of about the largest 2,500 corporations in the world, and they're exercising. They meet at Davos yearly in January. But those corporations are so powerful and worth so much money that they own most of the legislatures, legislative, you know, bodies in the Western world. And then they, those elements in there, individuals in there with others, own most of the central banks. So the central ownership of the central banks is their financial core, see, around which they own industrial and business interests in addition to those central bank ownership. So you put all that together, and these people meet, and they start planning out how to take over the world using Rhodes scholarships as a mechanism, see? So, and Cecil Rhodes, his inheritance was set up to fund the Rhodes scholarships, which are a training ground for world government leaders in the future, basically.
Zionism. How does Zionism tie into that, George?
Well, it's you have to go back to the Bible and look at some of the early beginnings of the Babylonian Talmud. There was the Jews were taken away into captivity to Babylon, and after their return, Judaism was never the same, according to some leading scholars that I've read. Okay, and so it was much more around the Pharisees' teachings, and also they brought in a Kabbalism and much more of a mystical Judaism. Okay, and that's where you have like Madonna today is studying the Kabbalah. Many of those Hollywood stars are pulled in to those kinds of occult teachings. See, but getting back to Zionism itself is that later on you would have changes in adulteration of Zionism by the Sabbatean group, and the Sabbateans actually was beginning to take over. And we're talking about the Ashkenazim group versus the Sephardim group. The Ashkenazim group was your Eastern European Jews, and your Sephardim were your middle, your Mediterranean, Western European, New York Jews. So those two groups are different. And but getting back to Zionism is in Russia the Pale was created. These are some of the reasons why the Jews got mad about being mistreated, so to speak. But the Pale was a group, was a area in the western part of Russia, eastern part of Poland, where the Jews could live, but under Russian supervision. It was part of Russia at the time. But they couldn't move outside and travel freely outside of the Pale, see. So there were things like this that built up over the years, where the kings would get the money lenders to money lend and then rob the money lenders. See what I mean? So,
right.
and then when you go back to the Sanhedrin Council, okay, I'm hitting around a little different here. I mean, I'm moving around in time here a little bit, so I hope that this is coherent in the end. But the Sanhedrin Council condemned Jesus to death and turned him over to the Romans, see, and the Romans actually carried out the execution. But before Jesus' time, you could say, the Sanhedrin Council, headed up by Hillel the Babylonian, had come up with what they call the Prosbul, okay? And the Prosbul was a mechanism, much like Congress does today by exempting themselves. But the Prosbul was formulated by the Sanhedrin Council to do away with money lending during the seventh year, of the, sabbatical. You had two different time periods back there under Mosaic law. You had a seven-year period that was called a sabbatical, and at the end of the sixth year, all slaves were to be released, land was to lay fallow, and all loans were to be forgiven, but no loans to be made during the seventh year. Well, the money lenders wanted to make those loans during the seventh year, and they certainly didn't want those other loans to be forgiven that hadn't been paid off. So they lobbied the Sanhedrin Council to enact administratively what they call the Prosbul, which was an administrative way to circumvent Mosaic law during that seventh year. And what it did basically exempted those people to where they could make loans during the seventh year and not be penalized and still collect their loans. Okay, so we get back to money lending here as a core, you know, source of power. See, now. No, those money lenders weren't always Jewish. Some were Gentiles and others throughout the whole world. That people would discover the power of compounding interest, okay? and the monopoly of money creation, which they started to do through the fractional banking system later, see. But early, remnants of that, forms of that would be through the goldsmiths in London, where they started creating receipts for the gold they were holding. But they finally realized all the people are not calling for the gold all at one time, so why don't we just issue more receipts than the gold we have? And that basically is the core mechanism of fractional banking, using a central banking system, and you have to have a check writing system for that to work, and that's basically what we have today. So we're suffering under a monopolistic money creation system through our central bank called the Federal Reserve, and then the Europeans, the Bank of England, they all have their own central banks, and those are privately owned. So you get back to the Zionists early on were kicked out of countries and abused by monarchs because they loaned to them, couldn't collect the loans. And so they started coming together. There was a big meeting in Switzerland in the late 1800s, and they began to organize on an international basis, and they started organizing and helping one another and expanding their money operations to where today they are the predominant, you could say, money lenders in the world, I would say, in the Western world, okay? And you have other people mixed in there with them now, so it's not just them alone. But so the money power is the power that most of these people are using today. And then Eric Samuelson and I, we talked all of this stuff out, see. And we begin to understand the money power system, the Federal Reserve, and all this other stuff. So if someone came into our meeting in the 90s there and wanted to talk about the Fed, we could talk about the Fed. If they want to talk about Weaver, you know, Mark Weaver, we could talk about that. If they want to talk about Waco, we were working on that. If they want to talk about later on the Oklahoma bombing, Mira bombing, we talk about that and so forth. So we began to be a clearinghouse for many people that were coming to our meetings in the 90s, see. And that's where really Eric really, he shone like a brilliant diamond he put the light on the darkness. See what I mean? Or treachery.
Do you think Alex Jones ever met Eric Samuelson?
Yes. Yeah. We met at different times. Yeah. We all knew each other. Yeah. Alex was beginning. He was in high school when we were having these meetings. But he quickly caught on and has become, the leader in this area now, because Alex has been a student of history. So Alex brings to his view a greater historical basis and foundation than many people that have studied this. So Alex Jones has a worldview that's pretty accurate as far as I'm concerned. And he's far advanced, and that's why none of the elites, the people that run this world, none of them will like him, see, because he's owned to them, okay? And it sounds far-fetched at times, and he does get out there pretty far out ahead of people to where they don't have the foundation to understand what he's saying, okay? So you've got to have a foundation in this, and you and I have developed, we've interviewed, about 600 people, maybe? Something like that?
Many, a lot.
Yeah, and so as we've had to interview these people, we had to go out and research and then asking questions. You can't be a total dummy, so you have to come up with interesting questions, to keep the conversation going. See? But
did Eric ever do any radio that you know about?
Well, we interviewed him on that radio there that time. I don't know if he went on other programs. I just don't know some of the programs that he went on. I can't tell you if I have a list of that. But we had that one, interview with him. And really, what happened was when he went down to the valley, there was a concerted effort to isolate him from me and you, okay? And I could never get a call through to him. After we went down there and came back, it was impossible to communicate with him, okay? I just couldn't maintain. And then finally, he popped up about 4 years ago. He popped up on Facebook. And I got up there and texted him, chat, you know, a little message, you know, to him. Never, nothing came back, see? So somebody else was controlling that Facebook page probably, see? But that's the way it sort of went. And then I got worried about him about, 4 or 5 months ago. And I said, I'm going to, you know, find out what happened. And I suspected that he passed away. And so I made an application to the Texas Health Department of Texas State Health Department. And then they ran the records. And he did pass away on June 21st, 2015 in Hidalgo County, which is where he was living at the time. But I don't have any details, and I've never been able to talk to anybody hardly that knew him, that he was living with someone. I talked to that guy once that he was living with, but he never passed on any messages to Eric, see.
Right.
But Eric, the work that he did, he was God-fearing. He was a fine person. He was a gentleman. He always treated people with respect. He was open to talking to anyone that was interested in these subjects that he was interested in. And he went out to the university. We had a problem with the restaurant that we were meeting in. And so they said, you're just going to have to go somewhere else, you know. I think one of our members there that was meeting, what happened was we met in the back, okay, and somebody put a sign up and said, no smoking beyond this point. That didn't go over too big, you know, too good. And then that same person that put that sign up, maybe he, we don't know if he sabotaged our meeting there or not, but he put up a little printout of sort of a semi-nude type deal, you know, a pinup picture. That, and then he said, oh, look at all the beautiful colors of my new computer. You know what I mean? And one of the waitresses saw that and said, huffed and puffed off to the manager. Before you knew it, we were denied to meet there anymore. So we started meeting in different places at the university and different places from then on. And then gradually, Eric moved down to the valley. And after he moved down to the valley, then our communication was pretty well, you know, dead at the time. It dried up, you know. But anyway.
His work continued in the form of the click-off, the tremendous amount of research he's compiled.
Yes, he has. He calls this the Conspiracy Scholars Nook, you know, N-O-O-K. And it's on Bible Believers. We have the click-off there right now on our site. So you can click off and then go in. And there's just at the bottom of that page, there's two click-offs there. It says Books, Natural Realm, and then Books, Spiritual Realm. And there's just an ungodly amount of, just a tremendous amount of information, even on those sites there. I mean, it just goes on and on. What piqued your interest in this area, Charlotte?
Well, I met y'all in the 90s, yeah. And I, too, was learning about Waco and these things that were happening in the world around me. It was you and Eric that clued me in to the Federal Reserve and how the money system actually works, you know. So it was just, it was fascinating to hear you guys discuss things, and I learned a lot.
Right. At one time, after Waco happened, we didn't like what happened there. We had inside information, you know, from different sources, and that they burned the place down and they torched it purposely, intentionally. So we got on there and started researching, and I'll never forget, Eric said, let's call in all the Patriots from here to South Texas. And I said, okay. Before I knew it, the next meeting that we had 50 to 60 people in the back of this whole restaurant. We filled up the restaurant, back part of it, you know? And I'll never forget, it was sort of like the Green Dragon in Boston, you know? The last person to speak was me. And Eric and I were sort of convening the meeting, sort of the host there. We were host of this Monday night group anyway. And so I got up and I said, look, we've got to get down to the truth on Waco. And I said, we've got to really dig into this and not give up and find out what really happened there. And one of our members that became a pretty good friend of ours, I won't even mention his name, but he was working out at the university, and he went out there and put up a website that was unbought. That thing was, it was about Waco, but it pulled together about 40 or 50 resources, okay? And then that became sort of a clearinghouse for the Waco thing. And it sort of went like that, is that the group began to grow and get to expand. And, I mean, we never had another 60 people. That was just a special meeting. But those 60 people went back and started working on the Waco quest. And then myself and two other men, we suspected that the Waco transcript of the trial might disappear. So me and a couple of friends, close friends, we paid for a total transcript of the Waco hearing trial in San Antonio. Okay, they moved the trial from Waco to San Antonio, but with the same judge out of Waco, Walter Smith, which mistreated all of the Branch Davidians. Anyway, so we got a transcript and put it in storage just in case that transcript would disappear or be changed. See what I mean? You know, stenographers and people that do our court reporting, you have to rely on their honesty and reporting and transcribing all of that stuff correctly. You change a word from not or take out a not and put something else in there, you can change the meaning of different testimony. See what I mean? So anyway, we had that intact, and it still exists. And I checked the other day, and there's other copies that other people had also. So we weren't the only ones that thought of this, okay? But we wanted to make darn sure that the Branch Davidians would be treated properly, but they were not. In the end, the judge disregarded the jury's findings and imposed sentences and so forth that he had no real constitutional right to do. So this is the court system that we're up against today. We're up against a tyrannical, fascist type of judicial system. And the word fascist comes out of Rome, describing the justices, the magistrates at that time, because they felt that there was an axe, and around that axe were wooden staves, okay? And then they were bound up, and it made it that axe be like club-like, okay? And it gave more strength to that axe when someone used that axe in battle, see? So the judicial system, the magistrates of Rome begin to come together in their decision making and support one another, see? And that's basically what's happened, especially on our federal system. So the courts have been corrupted, and they have bound together, much like the fascists around an axe. And we've got that's just one corrupt thing that Trump is battling right now.
Yes, it is.
So, so what particular, I know you and other people around you, did you ever come down to San Antonio with us at all, Charlotte? I'm not sure.
I can't remember. I know I traveled south and met Eric once south, for sure.
Yeah, you met with, me and Eric at one time in South Texas. So, but we always looked at the, well, Eric and I burned a UN flag in front of the Alamo one time. Yeah, I don't know if you ever knew about that one. But, I mean, there's probably videos of me doing all kinds of things somewhere in some archives. I don't care. I stand for what I believe in. And that UN is, you know, when he spoke before the UN the other day, the UN has become a mechanism of rule and power and dominance, too. And so... we did a lot of things, Eric and I did, in front of the Alamo. We had a meeting down there. I can tell you the date. It was 1 year after Waco and 1 year before Oklahoma, okay? And it was April 19th, 1994, okay? And we met there, and the Texas militia had its first muster in 88 years there, okay? We met with the Texas militia. We handed out Vampire 2000 publications that one of our guys ran through one of the Fortune 500 companies, gave us free printing. Okay, so anyway, we handed out 200 or 300 of these Vampire 2000 publications, which the highest decorated officer out of Arizona, I forget his name, he was a broadcast with us for a while too. But anyway, he put that together about FEMA and all this, continuing of government, you know what I mean, type organization.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. And so we handed that out, and we had a really good. What I remember from that, Charlotte, is that talk about all this racism today. Some of our speakers at that meeting in front of the Alamo there on April 19th, 1994, we had the Texas militia there. We had black ministers there, men and women that were black ministers. They got up and spoke. We had white people speak. We had Hispanic people from the local organizations they headed up speak. We fully integrated. You know what I mean? And today they're fighting about, Antifa and all that stuff. See? I mean, it's just really deteriorated so much, hasn't it? Huh?
Well, the Antifa is something I'm out of step with. I don't understand. It seems contrived to me. Is that a Soros originated thing as well?
Well, they say that they have funding through Soros and other sources, but there's a big organization called the Tides Foundation, and we think that what's happening, it looks like corporations are funneling money into the Tides, and then the Tides redistributes those to some very, very radical groups, and we're thinking some of the Antifa groups are funded that way. And Bama, I think, is another one that is radical. And Black Lives Matter and all those are being funded through indirect grants or donations from Tides Foundation and things like that. What we say all the time is that they're bringing about the corporate system is beginning to dominate in a corporate fascist way, but they are actually funding Antifa and all of these left wing organizations to bring about world communism. Okay? And basically the way it works is that they want the world itself to be on a subsistence type of income that they can easily manipulate you through benefits and entitlement programs, but at a real low level where you can't ever be a threat and organized against them. And the schools have acted in that way for years to create a citizen soldier that protects the wealthy's property. You dig? That's really the key. And it came out of Prussia. That system of schooling was devised in Prussia, in the very area where the Hessians were hired to come over here and fight American revolutionaries. See what I mean?
Right.
So it's a very, very evil system that has evolved. It's awesome in size and scope and money power. Like for one example is that here lately is that Hillary was backed by the biggest investment company in the world, and that investment company is called BlackRock. It's headed up by Larry Fink in New York City. It manages $4.5 trillion. Trillion with a T. Now that is the money that's behind Hillary. So this deep state is fully funded by the biggest money in the world. And that's really what Trump has been up against. I don't think he had an idea of how much power they had. Okay? Because he was up pretty high in political power, and now he's a president, but he was never running with those people all the time at the very, very top. You see what I mean?
Right.
And so he wasn't fully aware of the power and the control of the deep state through the NSA and CIA and all this other stuff. So that's where we're at now. We're trying to make sense out of this. We're trying to hold on to our liberties and freedoms You know what I mean? Then we have this knee down thing just came up. You know that?
Right.
But, you know, that was misinterpreted by both sides. You know? Kaepernick now, though, we know that his girlfriend is a radical out of Berkeley, okay? But anyway, what we were saying is that the Kaepernick, the fellow that first launched this knee down thing, he has connections to his girlfriend and wife, I believe it, to very radical elements in the Berkeley area, okay? And so we think maybe that's what was behind his initial, knee down and all that, okay? There are other players that wanted to do that more as a protest against the way that blacks have been treated by the police or whatever. See what I mean? They didn't necessarily want to insult the flag or whatever. And then there are others that probably did insult the flag. So Trump comes along and he just believes anyone that did that is against America and against the flag, see. And he blew up, you know, and his ego is immense and it can be a real problem. And it doesn't serve him that well at times, you know what I'm saying.
And no, so, it does. It's kind of embarrassing.
Well, you know, he shouldn't, I supported him, but I don't believe in people cussing like he did. There's children out there, too, to think about, right? Huh?
Sure, yeah.
And also, just doing that alienates the people that you're trying to win over. You're not going to win over. He comes from an authoritarian type of personality type, and he believes to intimidate. He's trying to use sort of a corporate structure like a CEO would, but the president of the United States is not the same as a CEO, see what I mean, of a company. And so he hasn't quite adjusted to becoming a leader versus a CEO of United States corporations, see what I mean? So
right.
He's got to try to wake up. And of course, I support him, and I'm trying to work with him and trying to get him to become more of a statesman, see? That's what he needs to learn how to do, okay? But if he keeps on doing this, it ruins his presidency, okay? There's 65% of the people that are against this knee down thing. Take a knee. They're on the Patriot side. So they're on his side. But then there's a lot of other people that he alienated and made very mad, see what I mean? By his,
yep.
By his, you know, intimidation and cussing of them. And it doesn't. What do you think, Charlotte?
About the same as you, George. I kind of wish the NFL wasn't funded. I understand there's some taxpayer dollars that go to the NFL.
Billions of dollars have been paid to them on stadium deals. And things like that. And promotions of all people, Barack Obama gave them certain monies to promote patriotic things. You know? But it was
crazy.
Anytime you saw Barack Obama do something like that, it's about the money. They have to get programs going to get the money going so they can start, you know, skimming. You know what I mean? I don't know that he did any of that on those monies. But without projects, you can't get a cash flow going, right?
Right.
So you got to promulgate projects to get money allocated and start spending it on these projects, and that way you can get some of it back from some of the recipients, say, with kickbacks and stuff. So that's the way that works. But getting back to Eric, did you have any questions about Eric Samuelson, Charlotte, over the years or what?
No, I do remember he did have some health problems there.
Diabetes. He suffered from diabetes. Yeah.
Yeah, and that may have been what took him in the end.
It could have. He was trying to you know, pioneer in some new, treatment of diabetes. I know when we went down there, he was relating to us some of the treatment that he was trying to work on his own self, you know what I mean? But
right.
Others would say that that it's a dietary type of the best solution is dietary, but I don't know.
It's difficult to know. So what are your thoughts about Eric's life and I'm sorry, George, that your friend is gone now and his dad. So what would you like to say about him as we come to the end of our time?
Eric Sandelson was a stand-up person. He loved this country, and he loved humanity. He loved his fellow man. He worked night and day tirelessly to compile and put together information that he felt like the American public needed. He made sacrifices that ultimately probably resulted in his early death because of the diabetes. And I mean, to look at this volume of work that he put together is astounding for one man to have accomplished during his lifetime. So I'll say that his life was worthwhile. It was worthy of, like you said, a master of conspiracy thinking. But he truly made some breakthroughs in this area of conspiracy, you know, scholarship. Okay, and he coined that term. And I put that term, you know, forward to Jim, you know, different people, Jim Mars, and they would laugh and say, "That's it, George." You know what I mean? They love that word, conspiracy scholar, okay?
I remember.
Because it removed them and me and everybody else out of this conspiracy nut designation, okay? But you know who created that idea? The government did after the JFK thing. They put together, there was a memo that they put out to all the FBI, and they created this idea of these conspiracy thinkers and radicals and nutcases out there to watch out for. See what I mean? And so they actually seeded in to the FBI the idea of conspiracy nutcases. See what I mean? So,
mm-hmm.
So they could cultivate that. And so that anybody came up with anything that sounded, you know, off the wall was a conspiracy nut, and they were not to be listened to. Okay?
Yeah.
But anyways, we've done our part in you know, blazing the trail to a degree, and with 600 interviews and stuff to our credit, and we'll be November 1st will be our 11th year, Charlotte.
Yeah, that's been a little. It's been a great journey, George. We started off like a rocket, boy. I remember it was fast and furious.
It was.
I learned
wasn't it?
So much.
Huh?
Those several first years, I sure learned a lot.
Yeah. And you really researched a lot, didn't you?
Yeah, and I've learned so much. And I still learn stuff from our programs and our authors.
Well, I'll say some of the contributions that I like that you've made is this cannabis thing was really a major contribution. And then I'll say over and above that, your continued lobbying to recast the World Trade Center attack into a criminal act was far beyond anyone else at thinking at the time. Okay?
Oh, well, thank you, George.
Because everybody else was thinking attack by a foreign element, and you were saying, it's a criminal conspiracy. We need to keep it on a criminal investigation. But the reason why, the conspirators, they never wanted that, you know, to be. But there is a group in New York, and they're working on that now. We've got about 3 minutes left now. What would be some of your final comments, Charlotte?
Well, I wanted to encourage the listening audience to hang tough. You know, it's a tough time in American politics right now, and we need to keep our eye on Trump and his associates and Israel and just all the things that they're doing.
Yeah, we need to look at AIPAC carefully. And we need to look at the ADL and everything else, that any attack that's launched against anyone that's writing about Israel or anything about the Zionist power in America. There was a recent retraction of a lady that was CIA, wasn't it? I think recently. And she was outed as a CIA agent. And then she retracted her statement about their power and everything else. But anyway, we've got to try to open up the American public to a new way of thinking. You know what I mean? And we've got to include everybody in there as the elitist, you know? It doesn't matter who they are. We just can't be, you know, prejudiced against one group versus another group. We just have to tell it like it is. And sometimes it's not a very nice story, is it, Charlotte?
No, I'm afraid not, George.
It's very ugly. And the problem that I see with 9/11 is the real truth about it and how it was done and who carried it out is such an ugly truth that people don't want to hear it, do they?
Well, they've heard it. A lot of people have woken up to it. It's a lot different than it was back in 2003 and 6 and 9. And
it was tough back then, wasn't it? Huh?
Yeah, people didn't actually know there was a third building. And I think today a lot more people are understanding this 9/11 truth is not going away.
Well, you were out there when they put up that third beam that night, weren't you?
Yeah, and I was honored to be there, yeah.
That was 2010 in New York City. We were up there at that 9/11 Truth Conference. And I think I was so tired, I think I was nodding out while y'all were out there. You know what I mean? But
it was fun to see. I saw it with my own eyes. It was beautiful. And then they took pictures they made it.
Oh, man. So you've done some very marvelous things, Charlotte. You got a beautiful soul. You got a beautiful soul. You know that?
Thank you, George.
And I just want to wrap up. I want to thank Eric Anders Samuelson for all the fine work he did during his lifetime. And Eric, you got a beautiful soul, and your work will live on in the hearts of many patriotic American citizens and world citizens worldwide will benefit from your work and your insights also. So thank you, Eric Anderson, Anders Sanderson, for all your hard work. And I guess we're going to sign off here, Charlotte, and call it a night,
right?
Huh?
Yeah, good night, George.
Okay, good night. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Charlotte Littlefield Brown, for being with us again on that memorial for Eric Anders Samuelson. And I just want to say some closing words myself. Sort of, I know he's in heaven because he's a heck of a guy. He made great sacrifices in hour after hour tirelessly working for this country. And trying to put together some ideas and expose some really conspiratorial, you know, connivings by some of the worst people in the world. But in the end, he stood like a brilliant shining light in exposing the truth about these people. So Eric, thank you again for everything and all the hard work that you put out over the years. And I want to say, well, adios, Mom. You know, mi amigo. And you really did a fine job. And there's nothing more that I can say than good night. And God bless you, Eric Anders, Samuelson. You're just a great person and a great, great guy. Good night.